Hi, this is Natalie Lander, voice of Kinsey, Tara Branford, Stargirl, and many others. You are listening to a W2Mnet podcast. You can visit W2Mnet.com for other podcasts about entertainment, video games, sports, and wrestling.
And welcome to the third installment. I know we've made it three of the Black Irish podcast here on the W2M Network. I'm your host, Jason Teasley. And with me, as always, the black part of the Black Irish podcast, Mr. Eric Watkins. How you doing, Eric?
I'm not too bad. Today, in the words of Ice Cube, today was a good day. Granted, much cheaper than over the weekend, but that also helps.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely had an eventful weekend myself, trying to get everything squared away. Had to run some few errands, dropped $70 on a dinner that my daughter barely even ate. But tonight's episode, we've been talking about this really on and off throughout the past week since our last episode dropped that you can find here in the archives of the W2M Network. Tonight episode, we're going to label as How Not to Be You. Now, saying that, Eric, knowing the topics that we're going to be tackling, I mean, we're going to dive into some really controversial topics a lot of people here on the network kind of shy away from. But being NPC as mean you are, we take things kind of head on. So, with that being said, knowing the topics we're going to cover and the episode title, what's your expectations?
Let's just say, especially with our first topic, I've got one or two personal ties and anecdotes to it, so that first one hit me in a couple special ways, so I'm more than prepared.
All right. As you alluded to, we're going to take the last couple of episodes, especially last week's episode, we tackled the racism issue and the issue of race in America as well. This time, we're going to take a different spiel, and we're going to take on a big name brand company that is basically making you do sensitivity training as part of their corporate model now, and telling Caucasian Americans how to be less white. So as a black man living in America, I just want your immediate take on that.
I was confused as all hell. And this kind of leads into my personal anecdotes, because you know some of my off-air proclivities. And I'm pretty sure I told you this story. There was one woman in particular who especially satisfied one of my particular fetishes as being pregnant. Now I know, folks, this is going to be a total left turn, but bear with me on this one. After one of our intimate sessions, we got to talking, had our usual conversation, kind of a banter, and she had mentioned about how she communicates with other clients and stuff, and she showed me how she labels certain people time wasters, etc., etc., in her phone. And when it came to me, I saw with my own eyes, whitest sounding black guy. And I'm like, throughout my life, that has made a lot of sense. I have had personal comparisons to Ben Stein, Mr. Mackey from South Park, Kermit the Frog, characters on Sesame Street, so I could kind of understand the thought process, and I know that it was never in a malicious way, but with a lot of people who just encounter me via my voice, they think it's something completely different. And all of the other past experiences about, quote-unquote, not being the typical black man, I'm like, well, you've got to take a look at what the typical black man is. And this goes both ways. It's like the typical white guy. It's not always the example from, you know, the Weird Al Yankovic white and nerdy video. That's over the top. So it's like, why are you telling people, yes, being like this or a certain way? It's like, if you're not overtly offending anybody, what's the point? I don't get it.
Well, I think that's the problem is, and this is going to be a controversial take. And like I always say, like I said on our last show, if you're listening to this and you easily offended, I'd be appreciative if you just turned the fuck off, because we will offend you. Me and Eric do not pull punches on any topic. But that's the problem with America. You have a oversensitized society now that where people get offended over absolutely everything. And with that being said, I mean, we're going to dive a little deeper into this, and I'm going to touch on some points that I got off the New York Post article that I had bookmarked for this. So it's the idea of one can speak for the masses. One person can be offended, and they get to dictate everything. Now, going back to this, this stems from Coca-Cola putting out a training through LinkedIn entitled "Confronting Racism: How to Be Less White." I don't know if a lot of people actually know what racism is, and that's the prejudice toward a specific race based on pigments of their skin. Typically, is how it's the layman's term. Now, seeing how to be less white brings up a lot of questions. And Eric, this is where me and you are going to have a little back and forth. So we had a lot of discussion, and one thing that I'm going to touch on throughout the discussion is a comparison that I made with you that, in your words, made a hell of a lot of sense. So we'll dive into that shortly. But
all right,
hearing the words "be less white." So with this, some of the topic is being less less confident, less. There's like four of them. There's less confident, less confrontational, less knowledgeable, less like one of them contradicted. It was like less knowledgeable, less certain, and less. Let me find it. I'm trying. Okay, be less oppressive, less arrogant, less certain, less defensive, less ignorant, more humble, listen, believe, break with apathy, and break with white solidarity. Now, Eric, you're a highly intelligent individual. I say this a lot of the time. You're probably, when it comes to, you know, intelligent conversations, you're one of the people I go to. So I'm just going to ask a really generalized question. How can you be less ignorant and be less certain at the same time?
You can't. Now, if we're going by the textbook definition of ignorance, that means you have a lack of general knowledge or perception about a subject or situation. You are ignorant of something if you don't have a lot of experiences and you just don't know. And certainty means you are sure, you have this absolute either knowledge, perception, what have you. So, that is a total, those two statements are totally oxymoronic and contradictory, because by being by pure definitions, being less ignorant means you gain certainty and experience of things. And being less certain means you are more ignorant of a lot of different nuances or facts or what have you. So, why would they put those two together? That would confuse anybody, really.
So, what you're saying is, in their training, Coke is actually showing their ignorance and certainty all in the same thing, because they're certainly, they're saying you can be, you have to be a certain role, but you can't, you also have to be less ignorant. So you can't be less ignorant and be less certain. I mean, it's theoretically impossible. I mean, that's not right. How logic works. Now, this is going to go into a really, really controversial topic that we had offline and I alluded to earlier. By the way, Coke and LinkedIn has since pulled this training, but it was still out there, and that's why I wanted to touch on it. Now, I'm trying to fuck it. We're gonna be blunt. I said that we pull no punches, so we're not gonna pull any punches. So we had this discussion. Stuff like this comes from a quote unquote woke society. When looking at said woke society, you typically have a generalization and a stereotypical, so be it, stereotypical voice of the woke society. And that is typically a young Caucasian who protests and screams that black people are being oppressed. Like, and this is the question that I pose to you, Eric. Coming from that demographic and that minority, how do you feel about having a white person basically imply in their wokeness that they need to speak for the African American community because they cannot speak for themselves?
I am going to put this in the simplest way I possibly can, so that way anybody gets any sort of butt hurt, anything like that, you can take this however you want, but it's just a few words. If you don't speak to me, don't sure as fuck speak for me. Yes, you can go on generalizations and things about what are happening in mass with different levels of discrimination, different levels experiencing police brutality and what have you. Do they exist? Yes, I don't question that. In some cases, I have experienced some of those personally. But at the same time, you're going to go out there and say, each and every one of us as black people thinks the same way, and you're just going to get away with it? And as someone who, especially with older generations, like even when President Biden said about his think of black people thinking in a monolith, sure as shit didn't like it from him, and he's someone who, in theoretically, because he's in his 70s, should at least know better because of the things that have gone on historically in his lifetime. Now, you take that from someone who is a millennial, or even and more so, you find this more wokeness within Generation Z, which is even more annoying because it's like, yes, I know it's a bit hypocritical when I say, oh, you haven't lived, because I am only 34, soon to be 35. But even with then, what have you experienced? What have you really dealt with and what you've seen? yeah, the world was shit when you were born and it's gotten worse, but think back to even 15 years before that and pile that on. So when you're saying all these kinds of things, yeah, we get it, but why are you only stepping up to the mic instead of pulling up a chair, sitting down, and having some real conversation before you pop off at the mouth? And this is also why I hate the word woke. That word alone just bugs the hell out of me.
Well, I'm going to say the exact same thing and make the exact same analogy that I made in mining your conversation off air. I see this, and I know this is going to be highly controversial, and I ask you if you see this as something similar. Let's go on a history lesson here. Back in slavery days, an educated slave was the most dangerous thing because they could think for themselves. So typically you had the quote unquote master of the plantation speaking for them because they wasn't educated enough to speak and think for themselves. And I was very blunt. I said, Eric, do you feel like this is kind of the new version and the woke generation's version of a slave-master relationship? And you told me, just like, that's a very good correlation, because it's like you have these people who want to speak for a demographic they know nothing about, a generation, a livelihood that you know nothing about, and you're implying that African Americans are uneducated and they can't speak for themselves, which really offends me, because like I said, me and you are really, I mean, you're one of my best friends. You're one of the most intelligent individuals I know. When me and you have sat down, we have very open, very intellectual conversations. We don't get offended. We say what we feel. We discuss it. We hash it out. We see each other's points of views. Me and you don't always agree on some. But by the end of the conversation, we come to a very, very good understanding. And it lessens each of us, our stance on each side. And we come to a very, very good common ground and a very good medium because of the ideas and the influences we share. Now, growing up, everybody that has listened to me on the WN2M network, has listened to the kickoff. Not so much here, because this is a brand new show. I recently lost my mom. I grew up in a small town in West Virginia, where you was basically, the term of it takes a village implied in my community. We didn't see color. I had several black friends who, if they seen my mother out in public, they did not refer to her as Miss Teasley. They did not refer to her as Georgetta. They referred to her as Mom. Because growing up, I didn't see color. And I guess that's just you know, sheltered life that I lived in. Now, once I moved to Huntington, I kind of got educated and stuff. I see the diversity. I see the basically the bad side of things, per se. So, looking at this, I mean, how does it make you feel? I mean, do you agree with that correlation that it's kind of the going back to the kind of master slave mentality of they're not educated enough, so we have to speak for them?
I really do, and I honestly think in some ways it's worse now than it was in the days of slavery. Because, and I have always said this, I've said this on Point of Viewer, I've said this, you know, in my conversations with you, I probably have said it here on our previous episodes, you can check through the archives, and I say this all the time. When you control the information getting out, you can control that narrative. Back in the days of slavery, there wasn't a whole lot of information to get out. Everything was mostly written. You had either newspapers or word of mouth communication. And for slaves, you had your masters and everyone else make sure, okay, don't let them figure out ways to read or write. Don't teach them the alphabet, a lot of these things. They'll know how to talk to a certain extent, but that's it. That was all that they had to control, and it was damn successful. You had those few that learned and studied and even wrote books and what have you, and that really pissed off a lot of the white folks. Now fast forward to today. You've got this whole education set up. Our educational system is shit as is across the board. Now you look at it for black people and other people of color. It's even shittier because you have those same white people, descendants of or new ones coming along, controlling this mindset because we have things like private prisons and all these things. And even in high school, my shop teacher read to us a whole big article that said, hey, you don't want a black man to know something? Put it in a book. He'll never read it. So you have all these kids who want to read and achieve and do things like myself. A lot of them aren't given those resources as the same as white people. A lot of them aren't given these same tools. And those who are and who have ways to get them and people to fight for them, they scratch and claw and they can accomplish so many things. So you have that part of that set up where everything's already tampered down. Now you don't even have your older people. You have the younger people who grew up in this situation that aren't entirely ignorant of it. They've had to have seen to some extent what's going on, going off and saying, oh, well, they don't have this or they don't have that, so I've got to be the one to tell them. When you're going ahead and spreading this to the masses, instead of doing this and saying, hey, why don't I use my resources and everything of what I have to invest and close this gap? No, I'm just going to yell and scream about it, but I'm not always going to be one to quick to fix anything. That sounds a lot like master-slave kind of stuff to me.
And this is going to dovetail into something. You opened up a very big door, and I'm just going to walk my white privileged ass on through, I guess, since, you know, I have white privilege, supposedly. So, with that being said, so you brought up a good analogy. So, all these people that are wanting restitution from what happened 400 years ago or so, 200 years ago, that happened in our past, 200 years, that happened in our past. So you're saying that all these people that are begging for restitution are basically letting the same thing go on today willingly due to following people blindly and letting other people to speak for them and not having a mind of themselves.
Some are. And this is the whole thing about ineffectual leadership. Those who step up the mantle, white and black, I can't single out a soul in this case. They're saying, oh, we should get reparations for all these things that happened to us and this and that. All right. From a financial argument, one that is minimally talked about, how do you quantify it? Because yes, if you look at those who were in the Japanese internment camps post-World War II, our government has set a mild precedent of it, to get that out of the way. So how do you quantify it? And then at the same time, has anybody ever really thought what they're going to do if and when that time came and everybody just got cut a blank check? I mean, I'm sure a lot of us have seen the reparations bit on Chappelle's show. There were large kernels of truth. You don't have anybody, really. Yes, you do have a LeBron James building the I Promise School, saying, hey, I've got money, I've got resources, I'm going to invest in my community. You've got Chance the Rapper. I've got money, I've got resources, I'm going to invest in my community. Then at the same time, you've got people like Oprah, who would rather build a school in South Africa and brag like shit about her homegrown avocado trees, rather than give a shit about anybody in Chicago, where she really got her start. So, you give all of these people money, how much change are you really going to see? You're going to have those who are going to invest and make a tangible, real difference. And then you've got others. You're going to be seeing a lot more tricked out Rolls Royces and diamonds on your fucking head and grills and all this and that. So, that's going to be right invested right in the economy. Great. But how well does the economy do for your average schmucks like ourselves? The economy benefits the 1%. So, you do that. What are the odds that they wouldn't just go ahead and keep printing that because it's a cycle that benefits themselves? So, none of that has really been fleshed out, and all these people clamoring for it, they really need to look around, because that's potentially billions, if not trillions, going to a complete waste. And I could get that argument entirely about why it shouldn't happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, that you brought up a great point. You know, and I'm going to throw out a statistic here, and this is something that really, really blew my mind. I mean, you compared the statistics at the imbalance across the board in all major sports. So, you know, you brought up a good point with, like, LeBron James. Hate him as a basketball player. Outside, for his community and everything, I respect the man. For what he does for his community, because he does give back to the community.
Absolutely.
But if you look at it, let's take the NBA. We'll look at the NBA and NFL, because those are the two biggest money-making sports in the United States, athletically. So in the NBA, there's 74.2% African-American players. Out of the entire NBA. NFL, you have 58.9. Now, this is where this is going to come into effect, Eric, and you're going to probably jump on this and sprain an ankle trying to get aboard. So, when you see these athletes and stuff and doing interviews, they can barely put a coherent sentence together. So you take this youth, typically they do not come from wealthy families or wealthy education systems. They're usually public school kids that see sports as their way out of their home life. Typically. They don't get the best education. Inner city schools, public school system as a whole suck. And you throw money at these kids, millions and millions of dollars. They to a kid who has never had money and has never known that lifestyle, they get the me first mentality. They forget where they came from. Now, I'm not saying all, I'm saying a vast majority.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that many a times. I'm with you so far.
So, if these kids, and that's what some of them are kids, were, and we'll do the opposite side too, because it's a stark contrast. If they gave back to their community to build up their communities, which they came from, and helped build and shape them to get to where they were, do you think we would see the inner city struggle like they do? Or do you think it would not make very much of an impact?
honestly, I don't think you would see as big of a struggle. I mean, if you were to go ahead, like some of these kids, in essence, coming out of high school, rant in a story for another day the system of how college education works for athletes and non-athletes, whole different world. But if you have like these, you know, 19, 20, 21 year old kids, they take even portions of these fat contracts. Say, hey, I'm going to upgrade for my high school, middle school, elementary school. I'm going to get them better computers, bigger library, all kinds of stuff around, getting a center so they can go so they're not out on the street and all these things. There's a lot of stuff that they can do to where it wouldn't be as much of a struggle. Would there still be some? Yes. But the impact would still be very significant. Now, there's a lot of things that they couldn't control. But if you go ahead and you step up in your community by investing in a lot of these ways, so that way sports isn't the only way out of the hood, that whole generation would be entirely better for it.
And exactly. That's what we're going to do the stark contrast next. But I think that opportunity breeds success. If you don't have the opportunity, therefore, you have to, if you struggle to get the opportunity, you're going to struggle to succeed. I mean, that's why there's such a low percentage of athletes that go to D1 schools. A D3 school will give you just as good an education as a D1 school.
In some instances, better.
Yeah, it just doesn't have the marquee name. And that mentality you have to get rid of, which we're going to go on at a future episode. We're going to tackle the education system in America. I just wanted to really briefly touch on this. Now, let's do the stark contrast of that. Suburban white kids that have all these opportunities that can go to private schools because their parents can afford it and stuff, education-wise, they have better opportunities. Granted, I mean, that's a given. Because, going back, because they have the opportunity, they have the resources there to prepare themselves better in life. And like I said, we'll tackle this in a future episode when we talk about the education system in America. I'm just taking a look at it from a diversal race standpoint that people want to say that everybody is equal. I don't believe that. Equal opportunity is there. You have to work for it. There's some opportunities that are given there. I mean, you still have to see nepotism and everything such as that. But in that retrospect, you could prepare for everything. And knowledge is key. So when we talk about this, and we're going to dovetail back into the coach thing here in a second. So you want, when people say be less white, so are you to be more oppressed and not have the resources available to you? And we're going to, I want to wrap up real quick here. I want to let you answer, then I want to wrap up something real quick. So Eric, how do you be less white? I mean, I don't understand how does that even transition? Because to me, in a sense, that's being racist in itself by making that comment.
And it is. I mean, that's no different from people, you know, approaching me and saying, oh, if someone were to say, oh, be less black, and I'm like, how? I talk a certain way, I look a certain way. I mean, to do things with my skin would be incredibly expensive. But then other than that, what does that mean? And that goes across the board, too. Being less white means what exactly? I mean, if you're talking about the resources, you have them. You don't have to take away yours to give to someone else's. It's not as zero sum as people would have you to believe. But and if you're talking about, oh, with opportunities, well, again, giving other people opportunity, great. But it's like white culture, white this, white that. It's like, in the end, what is it really? And that's something that a lot of times I struggle to find out, aside from different things you see on TV, like your shows from the 50s, or Leave It to Beaver, your Andy Griffith, and your Mayberry RFD, to other things like poking fun at everybody in Appalachia and this and that. Things are associated with being white. How can you be any less of that if that's what you are? That there's no easy way that that translates. Maybe that's me.
Okay, and then we're going to wrap up with this question, because this is something I definitely, you know, in a small town in West Virginia, that was I experienced. There's no easy way to put it. I experienced this, and that's to be less white. So that says to be more diverse in your culture. So that means to adapt more of the African American culture. But when a white person does that, you hear cultural appropriation screamed. You hear the slang word for a white person that is quote unquote trying to be black. So, I mean, so what's the medium? I mean, if you're saying be less white, so is that saying be more black? Therefore you face the backlash of the whole woke cultural appropriation of quit trying to be black. But you're saying one thing and contradicting yourself in the same sentence. So what's your thoughts on that? How can you be less white? So basically what it's saying, I'm kind of all over the place right now, but this is a good analogy. Anybody go out and watch the movie Malibu's Most Wanted? Jamie Kennedy in that movie. Be rad. He is a white suburban kid who grew up on gangster rap and who embraced the culture. He is shunned for it because he wants to be a white rapper. Basically, and he gets kind of ridiculed, and that movie could never be made today. Just put that out there.
Oh, hell no. Hell no.
And you see this, but it's like, is that how everybody's supposed to act? Do you want people to adapt things? And how do you want people to act? I mean, the be less white, be less black. The basic question is, what do you consider white? What do you consider black? I don't know how to be either one. Is there like a checklist that you go through if you're white or black or, you know, Hispanic, whatever? Do you, when you're born, is there a checklist that, you know, the hospital has that they go through?
If there was, then hell, I must check off a whole complete different set of boxes. Because, I mean, yeah, am I able to identify certain brands of fried chicken just by smell? Yes. Can I also sit down and talk about the intricacies of the Tan Man ride in lacrosse? Yes, I can. Does this mean I'm bits of both? By that logic, yes. So, I don't know. I don't even know how with certain ways to ask. And you're putting a lot of people in a no-win situation. I mean, if you're just doing it for the sake of doing it, further gram for social media, or just because you're famous. Yes, I am more likely to call you out on that. But if you're trying to do something because there's a legitimate curiosity or something like that, I'm going to cut you some slack and create a dialogue and make these teaching moments. But the problem is, how many people really want the teaching moments? And how can you even be able to discern half the time? You really have to have a keen eye, and that is not open or developing by anybody en masse. There's some people, yes, but that's a very slim minority.
Exactly. So, I mean, just to bring this full circle, I mean, back to the Coke thing. I mean, so just forewarning everybody, if you do want to get a job at Coke, you know, that's your preference. But I suggest if you do, use Grammarly.com to write your resume.
Absolutely. I mean, with Grammarly, either through their extensions in programs like Word or their Chrome browser extension, or just by using the app themselves, you can correct all kinds of very complicated, complex mistakes, far beyond even spelling errors. And you can even make sure that your tone is proper and professional enough. So that way, those in their headquarters in Atlanta, of all places, can go ahead, look at your resume, and like, we're going to put this person through that training. This is someone who we want working and representing us at Coca-Cola. Grammarly will help with that aspect, at least.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, Grammarly.com definitely is that extension to help you write your emails, your podcast, things that, you know, I use to write our synopsis here, as well as our co-host, Eric Brahes, on the kickoff here on the W2 Network. I know he also uses Grammarly for all his synopsis, as well as his wrestling articles that he writes online as well. So you can you can use it for various things, not only for your resume builder. You could also use it for shows, synopsis, emails, or, you know, if you are using it for your resume, it gives you a leg up on how to sell yourself as a future candidate and make sure that, you know, you stand out among the other candidates that are applying for the position.
But you're probably asking yourself, how do I get to this land of wonders? How do I get this program? Especially if you're on a budget. Well, worry no more, because you can take advantage of a special offer and get a free 30-day trial. All you have to do is go to getgrammarly.com/W2M network, sign up, and get the ball rolling. Because if you thought Grammarly was good by itself, wait till you really see the premium features. Mwah! Again, all at your fingertips. Just start by going to getgrammarly.com/W2M network.
All right, and that brings us to our second topic of this evening. I think this show could just be let's piss everybody off and we hold nothing back, Eric, because this second topic, yeah, it's going to make one of our co-hosts, a topic that we have with her, Miss Kennedy. It's actually a really good topic that spurred mine and her friendship and led to me introducing her to you and Harry, and her becoming a part of the kickoff here on the W2M network. And that's, should transgender athletes be able to compete in their transitioning sports? What that means is a male that's transitioning to be female be allowed to participate in female athletics, or a female that's transitioning to be male be chime in and pepper some of my thoughts and opinions as we work through this.
We want to start with some breaking news this morning.
Well, I got peeks behind the curtain, certain things and certain stuff, and yeah, I'm probably going to have to start over because I don't know how much of that went out. So essentially, for those of you who couldn't catch that, Caster Semenya, female track star, went through a period of lawsuits that went all the way up to the Court of Arbitration for Sport as far as she having too much testosterone in her body and not being able to compete at the 800 meters. And this were lawsuits after lawsuits after lawsuits after lawsuits. And at the latest track, going back to 2019, she lost her right to compete because of her body producing too much testosterone naturally and having in the committees asking her, hey, you've got to take this medication to be within acceptable limits of testosterone versus estrogen and things like that. So as someone who goes through all these kinds of blockers and different medications and all of things, it is a very significant process. However, everybody's biology, even with that, is still different. You're still going to have some biological advantages and disadvantages. If you were transitioning to a male, yes, you are going to get testosterone injections and everything, but it's going to take time for your body to produce that naturally. So if you are competing to men who were assigned male at birth and who have those hormones, you're going to be at a disadvantage in some ways. Some cases significant. Same thing, if you are transitioning male to female, your body is going to take time and still not produce all of the estrogen that's if you were assigned female at birth and were producing that naturally. So you're going to have an advantage in your levels of testosterone, as in Semenya's case. So I can get the argument from that pure stance. It wouldn't make sense because you're going to be writing and rewriting all kinds of different record books just because of biological nature. Now, for those who are intersex and have X and Y chromosomes in their biology, that's an entirely different realm altogether. I don't even think I could touch on that one fully.
Now, yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. Now, in no way am I against, you know, I don't care if you're transgender. It does not affect me. That's my stance on it. If you're transitioning to be a male, so be it. If you're transitioning to be a female, so be it. If you want to identify as a fucking toaster, so be it. It does not impact my everyday life. My stance on this is a feminist standpoint, because you have all these females that work hard, put in the work, that strive to be the best at their sport, their chosen sport. And then you have somebody that can literally come in and say they identify as a female, because you don't typically see it as female to male competing. It's typically male to female that wants to exploit this. And yes, I will say exploit this because and it's a biologically thing, it's a physiological thing. It's the fact that you have genetically a hormonal difference, male and female. Testosterone is a drug that is an enhancement drug. That is what steroids are for. Steroids can human growth hormone. This is why they're a banned substance. So you see this, you see somebody transitioning. And I'm going to touch on something that I feel a specific case that I'm going to bring up here shortly. You see this going on. Now, do I think a female can compete in males? Yes. At a professional level? Hell no. And if you want more insight of that, go look our co-host Kennedy up on TikTok. And she tackles this greatly. Now, female versus female in a full contact professional sport, great. But if you took someone, let's use LeBron James. He's won the MVP of the NBA multiple times. Let's put him in the WNBA.
I mean, he would just mop the floor with everybody. He would be even going toe-to-toe with Brittany Griner in Phoenix. It would be a cakewalk.
I mean, the competitiveness is not there. And you take that, let's take it to a high school level. You have a, let's say a guy that's riding the bench for the boys basketball team for a season. His parents think he's better than that. He wants to come out and say he identifies as a female. And, you know, he rides the bench. He's good, but he's not good enough to play. He rides the bench. He's got talent. He goes over, says he's a female, and wants to play on the ladies' basketball team. And he starts dominating.
Yeah, and what are you really going to do? And even on the reverse side, yes, there are reasons why you haven't had anyone since Nancy Lieberman, who one of the top caliber basketball players in her time, even collegiately, you haven't had anyone like her even break in to any kind of like a men's basketball really since. You didn't see it in the USBL, and especially with everything going on in the WNBA, you don't see the top players in the WNBA go ahead and even try to go for G League teams. Would I like to see it? Yes. Do I have a lot of hope of any prolonged success? To a point, no. And just like how, and in my mind, I don't see even one of the best like female athletes breaking into the WNBA. I mean, in the closest regard you're going to get to that, you're going to see it in baseball. But any of the others, hockey, no. Soccer, maybe. But that would take a bit of an effort. Football, absolutely not, like Kennedy mentioned. It's just at some instances you can overcome the gap, but in other instances that's a canyon you won't be able to cross.
Yeah, now like I said earlier in the conversation, a female transitioning to a male dominated sport, I fully support. But they must know the risk in doing so.
Absolutely. I'm there with you.
I feel that if a male transitioning goes to a female sport, I think it's an unfair advantage. Like I said, HGH is a human growth hormone, is illegal for a reason, which typically there's some form of testosterone being injected, such as, you know, with similarities to human growth hormone when a person is transitioning. So I think that that's the thing. And you take, and you know, what I don't understand is, you know, you have these people that want equality and everything, but when this happens, they're silent. I fully feel that, you know, everything should be equal. Everybody should be treated equal. Don't be a dick. Treat everybody the same. But when you're directly impacted, say you're a parent, your kid is the star basketball, let's use basketball because that's the most equal they have you know, basketball and for both genders. And you're playing a school that has somebody that's transitioning. They go out and your kid's probably all state. They go out and this person just bulldozes them inadvertently. Your kid gets hurt. Or you want to say that's the equality there? Or if your kid doesn't get the playing time that they were once getting because of somebody transitioning? Or let's go to the next level, to the collegiate level. Say a scholarship that your kid had that you couldn't send them to school unless they had this athletic scholarship for being one of the best people at their sport of choice. Somebody transition and takes that scholarship away. Now your kid can't get an education. How do you feel then? So this brings up a lot of questions that's something to think about. It's really rhetorical, but this is where I want to go with this because I state, you know, this. Let's take it to a step further to the world of the MMA, mixed martial arts, and Fallon Fox. If nobody knows who Fallon Fox is, it is a transitioning male to female that fights as a female fighter and who has fractured not one, but two of her opponent's skulls because of the physiologically and the advantage that she had as a transitioning female. And you think about that. You're stepping in. Everybody talks about, you know, a man should never hit a woman. I want to know people's stance on this. Is it a female fighting a female? Or is it a male fighting a female? And I mean, pronouns in a fight mean nothing. Brutality means a hell of a lot.
Absolutely. And if I'm in, guys, I mean, is she UFC or are we talking like Bellator or one of the other organizations?
Oh, hell no. Dana White has nothing to do with her.
And I'm glad because I'm thinking if I was in Dana White's shoes, I would not want to go into that minefield. Hell no. Especially for how he built up UFC and how UFC is going right now. That's something even for him, it just wouldn't be worth it. And even I'm looking at it as someone who, like, for example, I watch the Titan Games. Great show. You had a athlete competing the first time as a male, assigned female at birth, had a very successful collegiate basketball career at Stanford, transitioned, and I was kind of sad that he lost, but with a lot of things, I could understand why I would get it. In this case with Fallon Fox, it's like, when you have all of this, especially with aggression and all these things, the key hormone that takes in and comes into play is testosterone. And if you still have all of that testosterone pumping naturally, far more than any other assigned female at birth fighter would, you're going to get fractured skulls. And at some point, you've got to hit the pause button and say, no, this is absolutely unfair. And I believe the original case that you had mentioned that sparked this conversation we had off air was in the world of weightlifting, which the IOC is having issues with the World Weightlifting Organization. You may not even see weightlifting at the Olympics in Paris because of a rampant issues with a steroid and other performance-enhancing substances.
Yeah, I mean, and this goes back to what I was saying. It was a comedian who was in the UK who went and stated that he identified as a female and went and broke every female weightlifting record that stood in the UK in his warm-up sets. Not actually trying, in warm-up sets. Now, take that into consideration. I mean, it is one of those things that is mind-blowing. It's just something to go out and, I mean, it's something to think about. How do you, and if anybody does listen to this, I want you to take a real hard contemplation and ask yourself, if you had a daughter and say they had a disagreement with a trans female, a transitioning female, and they got into a fight and your daughter had a fractured skull because of this, how would that make you feel? Would you still support and still say that there's no difference? But like I said, I fully support, you know, I don't care what you identify as or everything, but I think that I think you draw a line somewhere. And I think that is when a male is transitioning to female, they cannot compete in that gender sports. And that's all I have to say about it. I'll give you the last word, Eric, on the topic.
Yeah, as someone who, and like I've said before, I'm all in with the LGBTQIA+ spectrum. I've got 6 of those 7 letters covered by someone, if not multiple people, in my personal life. I'm for it. I'm with you. I get all of your struggles and all of that. I'm right there. However, and I'm sure I'll use some of them, not a lot, but I could bet there's a few out there who's on our side with this. There's some kind of line when you're competing when biologics are key. And unfortunately, in sports, you see it all the time, biologics are key. It's the fastest, it's the strongest, you know, the lightest, the heaviest, what have you. So if you're doing this and talking about messing with your body in any kind of way, there's going to be some sort of consequences and you're going to be looked at differently. And unfortunately, even though in the case of transgenders, it's not messing with your body, it's aligning your body with how you feel, your perceptions and everything, so that way you will feel whole mentally and as a person. That's how it should be. But you know that even with those as alterations, there's going to be risks and consequences. There's going to be some things you can do. There's going to be some things you can't. And like it or not, in a lot of cases, there's a lot of things you should do. And there's a few things and instances where you shouldn't.
And I fully agree with that. And with that being said, how do you listen to your favorite podcast here on the W2M Network, Eric?
Now, me personally, I am more of a Spotify guy. I have also, from time to time, dabbled in Pandora. However, like in many aspects of my life, even as we were going before we came on today, I am always willing to expand my horizons.
Yeah, I mean, you could go over and use your favorite podcasting here on the W2NIM network. I mean, you can find us just about anywhere, such as Podbeam, Spotify, and you can even go to your favorite Amazon Music and use your Echo Dot and say, Alexa, look up W2M Network, and be able to listen to all of our archive shows, such as The Kickoff, Radley Jim Broadcasting Network, Black Irish Point of Viewer, and many, many other of your favorite W2M podcasts.
Yeah, and for all the time that I talked about at the end of our last segment, what you should and what you shouldn't do, one thing that you should do is take advantage and explore Amazon Music for yourself. You can even do it just by going to getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network. And like Jason said, if you've had any kind of Alexa-powered device, you can just say, "Hey, Alexa, listen to W2M Network," and you'll get, no matter what the show, the latest podcast that'll be up. As soon as this will be uploaded and ready to go, you'll be able to listen to our dulcet tones and get into our conversation with Black Irish. So, all you got to do to get that going, again, getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network.
So, with that being said, this last topic is something Eric brought to my attention, so I want to hand the reins fully over to him and let him tackle it solo, with me sprinkling in the lovely insights that only I can.
Now, for those of you also in the know when mentioning our other podcaster on W2M, I'm a bit of a soccer guy, and I, alongside with my wonderful co-host, however, things might be changing with Rachel McCrigger, we have a little bit of a special announcement. Stay tuned for that. We host Soccer to the Max, so we delve into the worlds of U.S. soccer. Now, over the past few days, there has been a significant story in U.S. soccer. Paralympic athlete, seven-a-side player, Seth John. He was on the board with the U.S. soccer. However, as it came time with a vote to repeal the policy which forbade athletes from kneeling for the national anthem, something that passed with over 71% of the weighted vote. Well, as we all should, we have the right to speak our piece if we are for or against these policies. Seth John took it one step further, basically mentioning, and I will throw in the article in the description for those of you who want to take a look, that, things like police brutality and all this stuff against black people, it really doesn't exist. And I'm Native American, I'm part of my tribe, and Native Americans are even more persecuted and this and that, and no one's talking about it. Now, after that speech, it was about 12-13 minutes, it was out there. It wasn't entirely the best of looks for U.S. soccer, so they voted, and he is now off the board. He has since come out and said he is not going to apologize for the statements that he made. To me, this hit in a very, very mixed way. Do I understand his thoughts and everything when it comes to the Native American community? I absolutely do. From the state of reservations, how they've been ignored, treaties are violated, even now to how different Native American tribes have been hit particularly hard by the COVID-19 pandemic. No resources, equal lack of mistrust with the medical community due to several instances of forced sterilization. I get that. He is, I believe, Cherokee, but again, that clarified in the article. He has every right to, as a Native American, speak that, and I agree. However, for all of the agreements that I have, and with all the things that he and his people have been through as Native Americans, to then turn around and say, all these things are not happening with black and other people of color, I'm sorry, if you don't see it to at least some extent, one way or another, either through ignorance or through willingness. You are blind. You can't go ahead and spout out all the rightfulness with your talk about how, oh, we've been ignored, we've been persecuted, we've been all of these things. Completely agree. But then to turn around and say, oh, nothing else is wrong except for what's going on with us. Nothing is going on with these people except with what's going on with us. Aren't we having issues with these sort of conversations already? Isn't this to a point like with what we've discussed earlier? You speaking and not speaking for certain people? Are you really going to be one of those people that we spent a good half hour talking about? Or are you going to take time and in depth and talk to a lot of players on your team or on other U.S. teams who have been through a lot of this exact shit that you're talking about? And I'm not even mentioning looking at the news. I've got my own opinions about the news and our news media. That's why I do not pay attention to vast swaths of it. But it's out there. And the fact that you even have with the what happened with the women's national team and this whole thing starting with Megan Rapinoe going ahead, taking her time and looking into everything during the height or even the infancy of Colin Kaepernick kneeling, looking around, kneeling herself, but also putting in the work and her efforts for the cause, and as well as her own causes? Or are you just going to be like that guy who's butthurt and throw away everything and every right for people to listen to you because it's one thing above the other? Like I said, you're wrong. You sit down and you need to have some conversations your damn self. There's a lot of things that you're on to. There's a lot of good that you could be doing for yourself and for Native Americans who have really had a raw deal the past 3-4 centuries of their own. But then you go ahead and you spout this? Please. No. Fuck out of here.
Yeah, I mean, you echo just about my thoughts exactly. I mean, there's very few things that me and you 100% agree on. This is one of them. That's why I definitely want to make sure that you took the lead on this because, you know, you can express it more articulate than I can. And, yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, you can use your platform to do so much more. And I think you should. I mean, that's basically all I can legitimately add to it.
Yeah, and he has a platform. I mean, I'm going to be honest. Before this, I legit did not know who he was. Maybe that's because with U.S. on our men's soccer side, we haven't been doing too hot. Being it the whole situation and not going to the last World Cup. We're going through Olympic qualifying. We haven't been to the Olympics in forever. And on the Paralympic stage, we're not usually contenders when it comes to seven-a-side soccer. So this is how essentially you're making your introduction into the sports world. And you do this when you had a platform and you could have created a lot more positive discussions on these things, like so many athletes and others in your camp and that have been doing things. Has it been rocky? Yes, it has. We just saw what happened with Carlos Cordero. But at the same time, get people talking about it, opening up some things, and let people focus more on the Native American plight that's been ignored. But no, you went ahead and you went, in my opinion, Jason, see if you agree, but you go ahead and you piss it away.
Yeah, I mean, you take the opportunity and you don't capitalize on it, which goes back to a lot of things that we've talked about this episode, is using your platform. You know, this ties it all up to our athlete discussion in the first segment, using your status and your platform to elevate a cause or a situation. So, like I said, I mean, if we had more people using their platform to elevate causes and to bring awareness and to follow through with it and not just use it as for the gram, for social media clout and everything. Because I know somebody's going to bring up a certain athlete that says, well, this is what he was doing. Yeah, fully agree. But my issue with that is you can listen to the Let's Talk About It first episode on the W2M Network Kickoff Archives and get my take on that for a more in-depth look about how he had a platform and he didn't use it, just like me and Eric's talking about now. So, I mean, really, I can't add anything to this. I mean, you've done a great job.
Thank you.
I don't think that there's very much I can do. But I do want to say that you need to be less white when articulating yourself. maybe we need to sign you up for that Coke at Coke remedial course. Wait, you're not. So you're an intelligent black man, and I expect that because you brought that point to light way better than I ever could.
You're sure about that? Because remember, you need to be less certain, but you need to be less ignorant.
All right. With that being said, guys, thank you for listening. Eric, where can everybody send all their hate mail to you online?
Well, I mean, naturally, you can feel free to send all hate mail to s.garmer@gmail.com. But we're not even talking about that right now. You feel like you want to have a little bit of a tete-a-tete with me? You can find me on Twitter @SquidSportsHead. We could sit, hopefully continue an intelligent discussion. I'm all for it. Or you can catch me live tweeting various events when I have the chance. If you feel like that's not the medium for you, you can find me on Facebook. Look up Eric Watkins. Picture of a guy, a cartoon guy, in a recliner, sipping some wine next to some laundry, you know the deal. However, if you're looking for different kinds of discussions, like I alluded to, and are curious about some different contacts and things that I've mentioned, because yes, I still happen to have her number, slide into my DMs on Twitter, undergo the proper vetting process, you'll gain access to my dark Twitter and other social media of that ilk, where you will find a treasure trove of that sort of information.
Yeah, and you can always find me on Twitter @W2MChairman. You can also find me and Eric, along with our co-hosts, Harry and Kennedy, just about every, well, we're going to be about sporadically through the off season, but during the NFL season, college football season, you can find all four of us bringing you to all the NFL news and notes to you. Through W2M, the kickoff, where you'll see a whole different side of me and Eric, and where the show kind of goes off the rails and Harry has to reel us in. We've just been joined by our newest co-host, Kennedy, who brings a totally different, very informative side to the kickoff show with her expertise about football and her takes on stuff in general. So, as always, you could look up all of our archive shows as well as any other shows on the W2 network through your Amazon music player, as well as, you know, use a keyword W2M on your Grammarly.com to see, also help with articulation so you can sound as smart as Eric is on the show. So with that being said, my name's Jason, that's Eric, and you guys have a good week.
All right. Remember, folks, do your homework.